Sunday, February 20th, 1944. What happens in other people's houses during the rest of the week happens here in the annex on Sundays. While other people put on their best clothes and go strolling in the sun, we scrub, sweep, and do the laundry. 8 o'clock. Though the rest of us prefer to sleep in, Dussel gets up at 8. He goes to the bathroom, then downstairs, then up again, and then to the bathroom, where he devotes a whole hour to washing himself. 9:30. The stoves are lit, the blackout screen is taken down, and Mr. Van Dan heads for the bathroom. One of my Sunday morning ordeals is having to lie in bed and look at Dussel's back when he's praying. I know it sounds strange, but a praying Dussel is a terrible sight to behold. It's not that he cries or gets sentimental, not at all, but he does spend a quarter of an hour, an entire 15 minutes, rocking from his toes to his heels. Back and forth, back and forth. It goes on forever, and if I don't shut my eyes tight, my head starts to spin. 10:15. The Van Dans whistle. The bathroom's free. In the Frank family quarters, the first sleepy faces are beginning to emerge from their pillows. Then everything happens fast, fast, fast. Margot and I take turns doing the laundry. Since it's quite cold downstairs, we put on pants and headscarves. Meanwhile, Father is busy in the bathroom. Either Margot or I have a turn in the bathroom at 11, and then we're all clean. 11:30. Breakfast. I won't dwell on this, since there's enough talk about food without my bringing the subject up as well. 12:15. We each go our separate ways. Father, clad in overalls, gets down on his hands and knees and brushes the rug so vigorously that the room is enveloped in a cloud of dust. Mr. Dussel makes the beds, all wrong, of course, always whistling the same Beethoven violin concerto as he goes about his work. Mother can be heard shuffling around the attic as she hangs up the washing. Mr. Van Dan puts on his hat and disappears into the lower regions, usually followed by Peter and Mushi. Mrs. Van D dons a long apron, a black wool jacket, and overshoes, winds a red wool scarf around her head, scoops up a bundle of dirty laundry, and, with a well-rehearsed washerwoman's nod, heads downstairs. Margot and I do the dishes and straighten up the room. Wednesday, February 23rd, 1944. My dearest Kitty, the weather's been wonderful since yesterday, and I've perked up quite a bit. My writing, the best thing I have, is coming along well. I go to the attic almost every morning to get the stale air out of my lungs. This morning, when I went there, Peter was busy cleaning up. He finished quickly and came over to where I was sitting on my favorite spot on the floor. The two of us looked out at the blue sky, the bare chestnut tree glistening with dew, the seagulls and other birds glinting with silver as they swooped through the air, and we were so moved and entranced that we couldn't speak. He stood with his head against a thick beam while I sat. We breathed in the air, looked outside, and both felt that the spell shouldn't be broken with words. We remained like this for a long while, and by the time he had to go to the loft to chop wood, I knew he was a good, decent boy. He climbed the ladder to the loft, and I followed. During the 15 minutes he was chopping wood, we didn't say a word either. I watched him from where I was standing and could see he was obviously doing his best to chop the right way and show off his strength. But I also looked out the open window, letting my eyes roam over a large part of Amsterdam, over the rooftops and onto the horizon, a strip of blue so pale it was almost invisible. As long as this exists, I thought, this sunshine and this cloudless sky, and as long as I can enjoy it, how can I be sad? The best remedy for those who are frightened, lonely, or unhappy is to go outside, somewhere they can be alone, alone with the sky, nature, and God. For then, and only then, can you feel that everything is as it should be, and that God wants people to be happy amid nature's beauty and simplicity. As long as this exists, and that should be forever, I know that there will be solace for every sorrow, whatever the circumstances. I firmly believe that nature can bring comfort to all who suffer. Oh, who knows, perhaps it won't be long before I can share this overwhelming feeling of happiness with someone who feels the same as I do. Yours, Anne. P.S. Thoughts. To Peter. We've been missing out on so much here, so very much, and for such a long time. I miss it just as much as you do. I'm not talking about external things, since we're well provided for in that sense. I mean the internal things. Like you, I long for freedom and fresh air, but I think we've been amply compensated for their loss. On the inside, I mean. This morning, when I was sitting in front of the window and taking a long, deep look outside at God and nature, I was happy, just plain happy. Peter, as long as people feel that kind of happiness within themselves, the joy of nature, health, and much more besides, they'll always be able to recapture that happiness. Riches, prestige, everything can be lost, but the happiness in your own heart can only be dimmed. It will always be there, as long as you live, to make you happy again. Whenever you're feeling lonely or sad, try going to the loft on a beautiful day and looking outside, not at the houses and the rooftops, but at the sky. As long as you can look fearlessly at the sky, you'll know that you're pure within and will find happiness once more. Sunday, February 27th, 1944. My dearest Kitty, from early in the morning to late at night, all I do is think about Peter. I fall asleep with his image before my eyes, dream about him, and wake up with him still looking at me. I have the strong feeling that Peter and I aren't really as different as we may seem on the surface, and I'll explain why. Neither Peter nor I have a mother. His is too superficial, likes to flirt, and doesn't concern herself much with what goes on in his head. Mine takes an active interest in my life, but has no tact, sensitivity, or motherly understanding. Both Peter and I are struggling with our innermost feelings. We're still unsure of ourselves and are too vulnerable, emotionally, to be dealt with so roughly. Whenever that happens, I want to run outside or hide my feelings. Instead, I bang the pots and pans, splash the water, and am generally noisy so that everyone wishes I were miles away. Peter's reaction is to shut himself up, say little, sit quietly and daydream, all the while carefully hiding his true self. But how and when will we finally reach each other? I don't know how much longer I can continue to keep this yearning under control. Yours, Anne M. Frank.